WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM, WMNF.org. You're listening to the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey, who we have on the line. Welcome to the show, Dr. Fred.
Good morning.
Well, thanks for joining us. So we're fundraising today. I want to give out the phone number and then let you take it away. The number to call in is 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation on our secure website, WMNF.org, if you support the great work that Dr. Fred does every week coming to you. It used to be every other week. Now it's on every week. And we think that that's an important service to you. So if you think that's important, give us a call at 813-238-8001.
So thank you for that. And remember, we're not taking calls today. We need to have those emails and calls to the fundraiser so I can talk to you about some questions. But to start off, just a little update on the news. I have been hearing so much disinformation about vaccines and masks again. It doesn't stop. Just to reiterate, immunizations are not intended to cure anything. So all of these shots don't cure a disease. What they do is limit transmission, and they limit infection, and they limit severity. They're not 100%, but they are in the 90s, or at least the high 80s, for prevention of transmission, for prevention of infection, or for reduction of mortality. It's really positive. All of them are working that way. News on Novavax, more stuff is being published. It's actually showing up as very effective. And in fact, what's interesting is it's 83% to 90% effective for the alpha strain of coronavirus, but it seems that it's at 96% efficacy for the non-alpha strain. So all these variants have a lot of coverage from Novavax. A company or a journalist just put out an article that said Novavax is now the best vaccine. Unfortunately, it's not available. And I spoke with the company today. And they are still waffling. They won't give any information besides we're filing in the third quarter. So that means up until September 30th, that will be possibly coming on through. So we don't know when it will be released, but I look forward to another available intervention to help prevent this. But in the meantime, we're still dealing with the fact that it's not 100%. And that even though you've had a shot, you can still get it. It might be mild. It's going to be a variant more than likely, but the masks still and have always worked. And so I recommend that if you're in a public place, you wear a mask. And but if you haven't actually had an inoculation, that you would be kind to other people and don't go to indoor spaces with your potential infection. Stay out of the restaurants and malls unless you're wearing a mask. It's pretty tough to wear a mask when you're in a restaurant or a bar, so consider staying at home if you haven't had an inoculation, if you won't wear a mask. Please be courteous to other citizens.
You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM, and this is the Health and Nutrition Show hosted by Dr. Fred Harvey, and it's a service that we bring you here at WMNF. Fred is a volunteer for us, and we bring this to you with only because we have your support, your financial support, and you can continue to support the show by calling 813-238-8001. And Dr. Fred, if you don't mind, I'm going to thank someone who donated even before we went on the air today.
Oh, please do that anytime. Interrupt me. This is okay. This is a fun drive.
I have an anonymous donation from Downers Grove, Illinois, has donated $88.50 to get one of our beautiful new t-shirts. It's a women's t-shirt, and she moved from St. Pete to Chicago last month, and she says she's grateful to continue to listen online to WMNF's great programs, even though she lives in Illinois. So thank you for that donation. We hope that you appreciate Dr. Fred Harvey's show. And if you do, make a donation on our secure website, WMNF.org, or call your donation in to one of our phone bank volunteers at 813-238-8001. And as Dr. Fred said, we're not taking your health and nutrition questions today. Although I should say that if you do make a donation, go ahead and write your question either on the website or tell your phone bank volunteer what your question is, and we'll try to answer that. So take it away, Dr. Fred.
So last week we were talking about genetics, genomics, epigenetics, metabolomics, and just a quick review, genes are the basic building blocks of our DNA. And the genes are the code for things to happen. They are blueprints for making proteins and enzymes and other structural components of the body. The genetics is the study of that and the study of ancestry and heredity. Epigenetics is a wholly interesting area that we used to call junk DNA. That's the on-off switches for the genes. So we can actually control which genes are being read at any specific time to create a different outcome in the body. And epigenomics is the study of how that works. Genomics is the study of how the whole picture works and how we have different options, essentially, in our blueprint to create different phenotypes. Phenotypes are the expression of the human condition. And then we talked about how it affected health and disease. And through that, I wanted to bring it into a new concept today called nutrigenomics. And from that, nutri-epigenomics. Nutrigenomics is the study of the effects of food and food constituents on gene expression and how genetic variations affect the nutritional environment for the person. We know a lot of things about this already just from what would be circumstantial evidence, familial studies. The Framingham study was in the 70s. And it looked at families in Framingham, Massachusetts, and it was the first study we had that showed the connection between cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart attack. And so from that information, we have lots of information about lipids. Since then, we've studied them even more, and we know that there's different ways that people can have problems with cholesterol. It could be that they absorb too much or that they produce too much in their liver based on genetic expression. And the foods that you eat then will affect the way your lipid profile will show up in your metabolism. If you eat too many saturated fats and you absorb them really well, you'll have high cholesterol. But if you don't absorb them all that well, it won't be much of an impact or as much of an impact, but it will still be an impact. Celiac disease is another example of how food can affect your body when you have genetic missteps. Celiac disease is a disease where you have a genetic predisposition to have autoimmune disease from eating wheat or gluten. And you can't avoid it, essentially. If you have the gene, you can't eat wheat or you will get sick. Diabetes is another kind of nutrigenomic interaction. We know that if you have diabetes, you can't metabolize sugar well. So stop eating sugar and carbohydrates is a well-known treatment for people with sugar problems. Dementia is a little bit more complex. We talked about it last time with the gene ApoE, apolipoprotein E. That is a very important cholesterol-moving enzyme, but it's also a moving protein. It's also a detoxification protein and helps remove mercury from your brain. And so if you don't have the right combination of gene there, if you have mercury in your food, you're going to increase the risk of dementia. And to move from nutrigenomics into nutri-epigenomics, that is the field that investigates the interplay between the food compounds and the epigenome, not just the genes, but the epigenome, and that's the on-off switches. We have so much new information about how that going into the phytochemicals, the constituents of the food. I'm sure you've heard of resveratrol from grapes and red wine. That is a phytochemical that has really potent activity on numerous enzyme systems in the body. Another one from green tea is called EGCG, or epigallocatechin gallate. That one also signals to the body to different things. Both of those actually work on an enzyme called nuclear regulatory factor 2, and it triggers this whole set of new actions in the cells to clean up the cells and help to protect the cell from damage. And resveratrol actually signals to something called sirtuin that helps protect your DNA. Genistein is a phytochemical from soy. It acts as a selective estrogen receptor modifier. It actually changes the way you can actually hear the signals of certain hormones in your body, like estrogen. And cocoa has epicatechin, which also regulates enzymes. All these regulate the enzymes controlling DNA and histone. Histone is the protein that protects DNA. And so these phytochemicals help us protect our blueprints. And they have anti-inflammatory and anti-tumoral effects because they protect the DNA. And so there's a lot of interest in using these phytochemicals to prevent or treat diseases. And so we're really spending a lot more time looking at how these can push us in a better way. And then we look at these other things, like chrononutrition, which is timing of your nutrition, time-limited fasting, alcohol and drug consumption, your microbiome, and xenobiotics. So these foreign chemicals that look like chemicals that are in our body that change the way our genes work.
You're listening to WMNF Tampa. It is 10:16 in the morning, and I'm Sean Canaan, but we're listening to the show with Dr. Fred Harvey called Health and Nutrition. And today we are breaking into regular programming because we are asking for your financial support. Dr. Fred is a volunteer who comes to you every week. His show, you may remember, used to be on every other Monday, but now we're on every single Monday at 10 in the morning answering your questions about health and nutrition. And today, instead of taking your phone calls with your questions or your emails with your questions, we are taking your phone calls and your emails and your web donations to help keep the station going. And we do need to raise $2,500 this hour. That means from hearing from roughly 25 of you with the average donation of about $100. So we do need to hear from you. Here's how you can call. You can talk to one of our phone volunteers by calling 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation on our secure website, which is wmnf.org. And Dr. Fred, I'm going to thank a couple of people who have already donated during this hour. Michael Hilla has called in a couple of contributions from Madeira Beach, $10 each, two $10 donations. Thank you, Michael, for those. Also, Palmer and Wanda Wall have contributed $35, and they're getting a WMNF bumper sticker. So thank you for the donations who have already come in. We still need to hear from about 23 or so of you. 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org.
So thank you for that, Sean. Thank you for those donations, folks. I want to hear more from my Pete. I haven't heard anything from my clients yet. So to move on, I want to recognize that there was a journal, actually, that was launched in 2007, Nutrigenetics and Nutrigenomics. I've read copies of it. Interesting stuff. The things that I just talked about recently, though, the chronogenomics and the food and drug interactions, and then lifestyle interactions. We found out that there's so much more than just the nutrition that comes into play here. And so the Journal of Lifestyle Genomics was created because they want to really talk about the diet-gene interactions, but also to talk about all these other lifestyle factors that interact with the genes. And it's becoming more evident. It's harder just to say that it's simply a gene because when they did a recent analysis of reporting on the association between plant-based diet and plasma lipids, they looked at subgroups and broke it apart and found out that a plant-based diet was associated with a reduced birth weight, for instance, born to white European mothers, while the opposite was seen for infants born to Southern Asian mothers. No one can explain this as yet. Cooking habits and other issues could have been problematic. And when you do large statistical analyses, there can be confounding, it's called, residual confounding. You can't figure out all of the variables. But it's a very interesting thing then to suggest that the same food given to different humans resulted in completely different results in the end. And so you have to understand, is it related to the digestion? Is it the absorption? Is it the metabolism or the change of the nutrients when they come in? Is it related to the storage of the nutrients? And so what part of this is simply habit and what part of it is genetic? Another very interesting thing was when looking at what's called a GWAS, a genome-wide assessment of a population. There's a great database in the United Kingdom that has everybody who's basically had a blood test has had a genome done. So they have this massive population of genome studies that can give great information about what's going on in populations. One thing that was found out is very interesting was the vitamin D receptor, looking at, in the United States, at the difference between European, Hispanic, African, Japanese, Chinese, all these different ethnic groups. They found that people with a specific vitamin D receptor change when they had the major change, and it was on both sets of genes, versus a minor change that was on both sets of genes, those people absorbed higher calcium, and it appeared that African Americans have this more favorable set of alleles, variations in the genes, than the white Europeans. And so it appears that due to this, white Europeans need to either take more vitamin D to get the signal better so they can absorb calcium, or they should take more calcium in childhood and adolescence. So it's really fascinating that we're looking so deep into this that even nuances in food and slight nuances are really important for different populations. We may be one human race, but we are a family that's so diverse in so much of the activity that we do that it's really very interesting to bring these assessments into our daily practice. That said, it's very difficult to bring it into daily practice because nobody really, not everybody can afford a genomic test. But we can use the familial associations and some simple blood tests to understand what's going on. For example, if we know a family has diabetes and we see that someone has a high insulin level and a high triglyceride level and a marginal glucose level, we know that they're on the path to develop the diabetes, so we can intervene. And there's lots of ways we can intervene. They'll affect the way the gene is read and the epigenome, whether the gene is going to be read at all. So there's so many good things we can do to boost that and help change the way our body actually deals with the blueprint that we've got.
And I think one of the things you're talking about is you're talking about changing that through your diet. So what is something, if you find out that you have maybe this predisposition toward diabetes, what could you do diet-wise?
Oh, that's great. So there's a bunch of different things, and it's not just food, it's lifestyle also. One of the best things that you can do, and Jason Fung, I believe it's F-A-N-G, published a book on this, and it's all about intermittent fasting in his clinical research study that showed that if people with type 2 diabetes, adult onset, not insulin dependent, go to an intermittent fast and either limit the eating each day to an 8 to 10 hour window, or you skip 3 days a week. So for example, you would eat Monday three meals, and after dinner on Monday, you would stop until dinner on Tuesday. So you have a 24 hour fast from Monday night until Tuesday night. And then you eat dinner on Tuesday. And then you eat a full day of Wednesday. And then Thursday, you would do from Wednesday night till Thursday night again. And you do that 3 days in the week, both methods, eating 10 to 8 hours a day or skipping 3 days a week, has been proven to reverse type 2 diabetes. In addition to just that chronologic change, we can also limit carbohydrate intake. So anybody who has sugar metabolism issues should eliminate the high glycemic foods, including juices, sodas, added sugar to anything, desserts and such, high glycemic fruits like pineapple and watermelon and honeydew are not the best choices. Fiber fruits, like right now in season, we have mangoes, we have peaches, we have cherries, plums, pluots. These high fiber stone fruits and the mangoes are just wonderful as far as being low glycemic, but still we can't eat too many servings of that because they are sugar. And so we want to eat good protein source and lots of fiber. So anybody who has diabetes should really consider eating 9 cups of vegetables and fruits a day, 3 cups of leafy greens, 3 cups of sulfur vegetables, and those include the brassicas like cabbage, cauliflower, and arugula, and the allium family, shallots, garlic, and onions, and the mushrooms. Those are the sulfur vegetables. So 3 cups of those and 3 cups of colored fruits and vegetables, sweet potatoes, carrots, beets, raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries, those kind of things. That basic foundational diet with an extra based on your weight, anywhere between 7 and 11 ounces of meat a day to go along with that, or eggs, fish, all these things are real, or tofu, are really helpful for keeping your blood sugar balanced.
You're listening to the Health and Nutrition Show on WMNF Tampa, and it's 10:26 in the morning, and we're listening to Dr. Fred Harvey, who's the host. I'm Sean Canaan, and we are raising funds this morning to help keep this show and others on the air. If you like the information that Dr. Fred brings you every Monday, please give us a call and support the station, 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation on our secure website. That's WMNF.org. I have a couple of people to thank right now, but I want to remind you that we still need, we needed to hear from 23 more people a few minutes ago. Now it's down to about 21. So we still need to hear from you. We need donations from you. 813-238-8001. David Bryant from Tampa writes in with a $25 contribution. And David says, I'm very pleased that health and nutrition and sustainable living are both on every week now instead of needing to alternate week by week. And for people donating online, David points out, look for the Health and Nutrition Show on the Direct Your Donation pull-down list at WMNF.org. And he wants, this is David's advice, he says, remember, want to know what the ache is? Please look for the H's. So that's what his advice is when you go to WMNF.org and you want to find the Health and Nutrition Show. Also, Loreline Aslanian from Sarasota is contributing $50 to the show and says, very grateful that Dr. Harvey donates his time and gives to the community. I agree. Thank you for that. Also, Juanita from Sarasota is donating $26.25. Juanita says, we've been vaccinated for COVID-19 and have been advised to get the new shingles shot, even though we've had the previous one. Is that too many vaccines at once? What's your recommendation? So Nina in Sarasota has that question, Dr. Fred.
That's a great question. I'm not a fan of stacking vaccines. However, some seem to be okay together, such as the influenza vaccine and the pneumococcal vaccine. Most people tolerate them pretty well. I would prefer to let my immune system focus on one thing at a time, so I would get the shingles shot and then any other for follow-up. Simply because you allow your immune system to be a bit more clean when it's doing its work, focused on one task, making the antibody response to one item, and then moving on. I think it just makes more sense that way. And also, I believe that the issue with infant child vaccination is a real issue. And although they have not been able to specifically find causality for autism with the MMR, Western medicine does not look at systems-based issues. And so when they're looking at causality for the MMR, unfortunately, there's too much background noise when they're looking because they give 1,000 shots with it. And so you can't really separate out and say which one of them is a problem. I believe that it's a toxic burden. When you put too many things into a fragile immune system at once, it tends to struggle. And I understand the pediatrics reason for giving all the shots at once because they feel they're going to lose that person to follow up and they won't come back and get another round of shots. It's understandable. But I don't think it's fair to the 18-month-old immune system to do that to it. And we could use better consideration about the immune system because we're talking about triggering the epigenome with a flood of inflammatory information that it can't deal with, and it overreacts and creates more problems. We can find a better way to do this that doesn't include losing the child to follow up. I think there are much better ways to think about this. However, the way the system works, everyone's too time constrained to give us the time of day to think about it. And so I think that, yes, I wouldn't stack your immunization.
813-238-8001. If you'd like to make a donation and help keep Dr. Fred Harvey's Health and Nutrition Show on the air here at WMNF. It's a public service that the station brings you with the volunteer help from Dr. Fred. And if you think it's a valuable resource that is worth keeping on the air in your community, we do need to hear from you. Please call one of our phone bank volunteers at 813-238-8001. They'd be happy to help you. They can take your donation of $100, $500, $1,000, whatever you feel is the appropriate amount for your gratitude toward helping to keep Dr. Fred Harvey on the air in Tampa Bay on 88.5 FM. You can also make a donation on our secure website, which is WMNF.org. And Dr. Fred, before we go too much further, I want to ask you about something I heard on the NPR News headlines at the beginning of the show. They were talking about how coronavirus infection rates keep increasing. They had been low for months, and now they're on the rise again, thanks in part to the Delta variant that's very much more contagious, I believe. The reporter said that in some Florida counties, the coronavirus infection rate is 25%. What can you tell us about that number and how high that is and why we should be concerned?
Great question. Actually, I did not see Florida's stats since the governor made it harder to find out what's going on in the state so as to keep tourists coming. I haven't really looked at those very much because it was too much trouble to look, but 25% is horrendous. And it just goes back to my premise that you need to wear masks. I wear my mask. I have not stopped wearing the mask. It's not a burden to me. I like wearing the mask because I feel like I'm helping other people. I feel like I'm being part of the equation to stop the spread of the virus. The masks work. These immunizations are not effective against the new Delta variant that is at least 60% of all Florida cases.
Well, can I interrupt you for a second, Dr. Fred? Because I've seen studies where they are effective. It may not be at the 95% level that they were at the original virus, but they're still very effective at reducing transmission. Plus,
qualify it.
Sure.
The problem is that even if you've been immunized, you can still get the Delta variant. It's going to be much less severe, and it's less likely you're going to transmit it. But apparently, it's transmissible. So it's lower transmission, but without masks, it's going to get transmitted. So if you want the shot, get the shot. It reduces transmission, it reduces severity, and it definitely almost eliminates death. So it makes sense. But masks also make sense, and they're not that much of a burden. I have a handlebar mustache. It is really problematic for me, but I wear it. People who don't have facial hair can get away with this. It's really annoying for me to wear the mask, but I like wearing it because I feel it's a good thing to do when we have a pandemic going on. Thank you, Sean. I totally agree with you. These shots work, but they're not perfect. None of these are perfect. So we need to do everything we can to help everybody around us get through this the best way we can.
And the number to call in if you'd like to support the type of information that you're hearing on Dr. Fred's show, give us a call at 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation to the station at WMNF.org. It's a secure website. Your donation, you put in your information there. It's secure. It'll only take you a couple of minutes to do. Hey, if you're making a donation by calling one of our phone bank volunteers or by donating online, go ahead and write in a question that Dr. Fred can answer. Like we had a caller who did that earlier. So we aren't taking our questions by phone or by email today like we normally do. But if you are making a donation, we will answer your question. So WMNF.org is one way to make your secure donation. Or you can call one of our phone bank volunteers at 813-238-8001. We've moved the show from every other week to every single Monday at 10 o'clock. And so if you appreciate that, if you think that that's a valuable resource in your community, we would like your financial support. 813-238-8001.
So I was talking earlier about chrononutrition. There's a very interesting subset of oncology, you know, the treatment of cancer, that does something called chronochemo. They've actually found out that the life cycle of certain cancer cells is more active at night. And so they have begun with certain tumors and certain forward-thinking integrative and functional medical centers to use the chemotherapy at night rather than during the day when most chemotherapy centers are open. It's been getting some really good results. The Block Center, I believe, outside of Chicago is one that does this. He's lectured on it. It's really fascinating. Another area of concern for triggering your epigenome is these xenobiotics. You know, most of the cosmetics on the market, especially fragrance cosmetics, have xenobiotics in them. And so every time we use some of these petrochemical-derived cosmetic things on our body, we absorb them, and it alters our metabolism. The xenobiotic called oxybenzone is used as a sunblock, and they found that it can actually turn male tadpoles into female frogs because of the disinformation that it provides to the epigenome, creating a new organism simply by the addition of this chemical.
Would this be a good time for me to ask what would be an alternative to that? Are there, you know, people want to protect them, their skin from UV rays. Is there an alternative that doesn't involve chemicals when it comes to sunscreens?
Yes, actually. Now, there is some question, though I haven't seen a lot of good data, that even titanium oxide and zinc oxide might be somewhat reactive. But from what I understand about chemistry, they're some of the least reactive substances, and they don't absorb very well. And so if you buy a high-quality, organic-based titanium oxide, zinc oxide sunblock, they work simply by reflecting the sun because they're white. It's a little particulate zinc that you can barely see on your skin reflects that off. A lot of it, you can get up to 50 sunblock, I believe. Whereas the petrochemical actually absorbs the ultraviolet, and it transforms the petrochemical oxybenzone into a free radical toxin. So that's how it becomes more carcinogenic. It might even actually cause some skin cancer. Don't have direct evidence of that, but if you're creating a free radical on your skin, it's not unlikely that it's going to do some damage. So I would stick with zinc oxide, titanium oxide, and then there's also the new ultraviolet clothing that's come out, lightweight, you know, the fishing gear and other kinds of sports gear that's light and actually reflects and or absorbs most of the UV. So you can get like 50 sunblock in your shirt. If you just wear a plain cotton t-shirt, you're actually only, I think what I read before is like something like 8 to 12 sunblock. So you really don't get a lot of protection from just regular clothes. You have to have these really tight knits or special fabrics.
You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 10:38 in the morning, and for the next 22 minutes or so, we're raising funds for Dr. Fred Harvey's show to help keep it on the air. This is the two-day membership drive. We're only going to be coming to you today and tomorrow. And I'm going to thank a few people who have already donated, but we still do need to hear from you. We need to hear from about 14 or 15 more people to support Dr. Fred's show. I have a donation here from David Hartman with a $100 contribution. David is getting our brand new t-shirt. It is, you can see the design on WMNF.org. The design is by a local artist, and it's a fantastic shirt, and he is donating $100 to get that shirt. Also, Juan Garcia is contributing $21. Thank you for that donation, Juan. And I'd like to thank now Barbara Cio from Sarasota is donating $50. And here's what Barbara says. She says, there's nothing else like this on the air. So thank you to WMNF and Dr. Harvey. And she has a question or a comment, but I do want to agree with her that thank you to Dr. Harvey for being a volunteer on WMNF, volunteering his time every week to have this informative program that's on your airwaves. And the way we bring that to you is with listener donations by people like you. You can call 813-238-8001, or you can donate on the web at WMNF.org. And Barbara writes that she had a bad reaction when she stacked different shots, and so she wouldn't recommend it. Now, let me tell you the shots that she says she stacked, because one of them confuses me. She stacked the flu shot and pneumonia. And so that confuses me a little bit, because pneumonia is a bacterial disease. So is there some sort of shot to guard against pneumonia that I don't know about?
Yes, there is, actually.
Okay.
They have been using, or I have been using in my practice for 30 years, pneumococcal vaccines. They have evolved over time, and the latest one has, I think it's 23 different pneumococcus subspecies surface proteins in the mix, meaning that they've isolated, probably made in a lab, some synthetic bacterial surface proteins, and there are 23 subunits or 23 different subspecies of pneumococcus that can cause community-acquired pneumonia. It's really deadly. Community-acquired pneumonia from pneumococcus is a fatal disease quite often, and so we want to avoid that. And it's actually most of the time what kills people from the influenza, because the flu sets them up for a pneumococcal community-acquired pneumonia, and pneumonia is what kills. So that's why they give the flu shot and the pneumonia shot together. Most people do tolerate them, but again, if you feel uncomfortable getting two at once, get one only, and that way you'll know which one you reacted to. Many people get a hugely swollen arm from the pneumococcal shot because it's actually a lipoprotein, and lipoproteins are foreign to the body, and our body does not like them. So when you get a shot of that in your arm, you get inflammation, and you get a lot of inflammation. So people do tend to feel pretty yucky after the flu, the pneumococcal vaccine, because it is 23 different bacteria we're reacting to there.
The number to call in is 813-238-8001. If you would like to support the great information that you're hearing during this hour on the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey on your community radio station, WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Newport Richey, wherever you are in the Tampa Bay area, every week, with the exception of today, every week we take your questions either by email or over the phone about health and nutrition. And so this is a service that the station offers to you with the grateful donation of his time from Dr. Fred Harvey. And this is a valuable service to you, right now we're coming to you today to, instead of asking your medical questions, we're asking for your financial support. And the number to call in is 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation on our secure website at WMNF.org.
I think one of the most important nutritional things you could do to protect your genome and your epigenome is something called methylation. And methylation is a way of reducing the oxidative damage or stress to the system. And we get methyl groups from specific vitamins and nutrition. So some of us have the ability to methylate in our body. Some of us don't. So we can't really tell without genetic testing which ones are problematic. And there is a genetic test called the MTHFR, the methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase test. It's been popular with many of my clients. They've come in with results from other doctors and we discuss it. Methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase is an enzyme that has a couple of different allelic mutations or SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, meaning that there are several iterations of this enzyme, but only one of them is exquisitely active. If you have an abnormality in it, it's less available to methylate. So when that happens, and that's a significant subpopulation, needs methyl vitamins. So you need to look for, you can get B12 out of your red meat and other sources, but if you look for a supplement B12, you want to get methyl B12 or methyl cobalamin. And you also would like to look for methyl folate or tetrahydromethyl folate, which is the most active form of that vitamin. Those actually protect the genes. They protect your blood vessel linings, because methyl groups are put everywhere in the body that you don't want to have oxidative stress damage. And the genes are covered with methyl-rich proteins called histones. And so to make better histones, you need more methyl groups. S-adenosylmethionine, otherwise known as SAMI, is another methyl donor. Another one is called betaine hydrochloride, often found in stomach support formulas. All of these have methyl groups on that really support the protection of your genome, your epigenome, and your blood vessel lining. And when you have the abnormality in the enzyme, you need extra methyl groups because you can't do it in the body. There's a SNP that makes it necessary to have an extra nutrient that we don't normally find in nature. And so we can help people with this by actually doing genomics testing. I really like genomics testing because it gives me a handle on all of the things that are going on medically in a person and gives me the chance to address many different problems. I like it because sometimes we get up against a wall and somebody's not getting better. The genomic test sometimes gives us some really good answers. I use a company called Genomics Medicine Works because they give a very detailed systems-based analysis of which genes are problematic for this person at this time. And so it's a great analysis. We spend 2 hours going over basically the entire medical genome. We don't look at every gene because some of them just aren't worth doing medically. But it really gives some great insights into what people need to do with their diet and their lifestyle. I've done mine, and I know that I really don't. I have a system that doesn't tolerate stimulants very well at all. If I take caffeine, I'm a slow metabolizer of caffeine. So if I do any caffeine after noon, I will have a disrupted night's sleep. If I take a Sudafed to decongest, I might not sleep for 2 days. And the same abnormalities actually are associated with the possibilities of developing depression, alcoholism, and bipolar disorder. But you don't have to develop those illnesses if you take care of your genome and make sure that it works well and you avoid the triggers for that bad genome. So I might have gone down a pathway that would have been very detrimental with addiction had I triggered that area often enough to let those genes run crazy and have me go down there. But fortunately, it didn't work that way. And so, but there's a lot of people that struggle with it. Alcohol addiction is such a severe problem. And yet there's no history or no signs of addiction in cannabis, but we know that alcohol is addictive, yet alcohol is available freely and cannabis is restricted. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't think that cannabis should be used freely all the time, every day by everybody, but I do believe that it's a very potent and useful tool, and we need to actually get it off of Schedule 1. So anybody who's listening today, if you would write to your congressman, to our Florida senators, or if you're out of state, your senator, and even write to Joe Biden and his Department of Justice and get the DEA to take this off Schedule 1 so we can actually study it medically. Because we're going to find amazing things that cannabis does with our genome as well.
You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 10:48 in the morning, and this is the Health and Nutrition Show hosted by Dr. Fred Harvey. And it's a show that we bring you every week that he donates his time and his expertise to you. And we're asking for something in return, and that's for you to help keep it on the air with your donations by calling 813-238-8001 or by donating on our secure website at WMNF.org. And Dr. Fred, I have a few people I want to thank right now. And then once people call in, more people call in, we'll thank them in just a minute. So again, you can call 813-238-8001 if you think that this is a service that we provide to the community that's worth your support. If you value this kind of information, donate online at WMNF.org. I have a $100 anonymous donation from Lutz, and they're getting the Peace Magnet, so thank you for that. They say they listen every week, so thanks for that. Also, Grable Plumbing in Tampa has donated $100. They listen to Fred Harvey every week. What a wonderful guy, so thank you, Grable Plumbing, for that donation. And I have a donation here for $52.50, and it is from Riverview, and it's from Alyssa Harvey, and Alyssa says, an excellent father, doctor, and soon-to-be grandfather help keep this show on the air. There's no one else that will be as honest and trustworthy about your health. So congratulations, Dr. Fred, and thank you for that donation, Alyssa. 813-238-8001 is the number that you can call to support the show, or you can donate on the web at WMNF.org.
Thank you very much, folks, and thank you, Alyssa. You have been my joy for 30-plus years, and it's going to keep going because I can't wait to see my new grandson.
What exciting news.
It really is. We actually worked with Alyssa and her fiance to work on these kinds of issues, working on specifically making sure that while the baby's in her belly, he's getting methylation. We've got to get these good nutrients into the fetus so that the nervous system and the vascular system develop fully and functionally. And we want to avoid as much toxic burden as possible while the baby's in the belly, especially for that first trimester. And so, yeah, we did some really good, clean diet things and got her ready to go for pregnancy. And so it's really exciting.
We're still taking your donations. You know, I have a question about intermittent fasting. You were talking about that earlier. So part of what I'm imagining, intermittent fasting mainly is going for periods of time without eating. But does that take into account at all eating small meals regularly when you're not fasting? And does that spike insulin?
So good questions. So intermittent fasting is, yes, it's just restricting the time that you eat. And so during the time that you're not eating, you can have water, you can have anything, non-nutritive sweeteners, preferably not artificial ones, because that will spike insulin. So while you're eating, you just want to eat really from my perspective, the human diet is really the Mediterranean diet, modified for whatever culture you're in, meaning that it's an 80% to 90% plant diet, a 10 to 20% animal product diet. It seems to be what humans have lived with for the last 100,000 years or so. The high volume of plants, as I said earlier, 9 cups of fruits and vegetables should be the foundation of everybody's diet, honestly. And what that does, and it's really hard to get to, I try. When you really focus on it and get that much nutrition, the phytochemicals are telling your genes to do the right thing. You don't have to actually do small meals, or because think about it, if you're eating for 8 hours, you eat at 8 in the morning, or say 10 hours, 8 in the morning, and you finish at 6 in the evening. If you have a noontime meal, you can basically have 3 full meals, and if you feel like it, if you need it, a snack in between them, but nothing outside of the 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. or 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. window. And you really do need to restrict your simple sugar intake during that time, because that's going to defeat the purpose. You will not spike your insulin, actually, if you eat this way, because what happens is you end up becoming more insulin sensitive. And so you'll need less insulin to actually control the sugar for each meal as time goes on. It really actually works to end the diabetes cycle. That's what's so cool about it.
We have a few more people to thank. The number to call in with your financial support is 813-238-8001. If you are a fan of what Dr. Fred Harvey is doing and the service that he's providing to the WMNF community, give us a call at 813-238-8001. We had a goal of raising $2,500 during this hour. We're not there yet. We still need to hear from about 11 more people. That means we need to hear from you. You can call 813-238-8001. We have about 6 minutes left in the show. You can also go to our website, wmnf.org. I want to thank Renee for a $100 contribution in Sarasota. Thank you, Renee. She says, thank Dr. Harvey for his show, and he's doing a really good job. Thank you for that. Charles and Donna Decker from Brandon have contributed $20. They are saying, keep up the good work. And also, Rosemary and John Cannon from Sarasota have contributed $50. Here's what they say. They say they've been listening to Dr. Harvey for many years. He's done a lot to keep me healthy. I appreciate him and WMNF for this show. Well, thank you. We certainly appreciate Dr. Fred and the wonderful expertise he brings on the air for our listeners. And the one way that we can keep it going is because we get donations from you. We get financial support from our listeners. You can do that by calling our phone bank volunteers at 813-238-8001. And I got ahead of myself. I was giving out the website, which is also another way where you can make your donation. That's WMNF.org.
Yes, thanks for those donations, everyone. And another thing to consider in the interaction of epigenome, genome, and our lifestyle is also gut bacteria. there's a very interesting connection between the microbiome and the genome in the clock gene. There's actually a clock gene 1 and a clock gene 2. Both of those genes, when they are normal, support a good microbiome in the gut. When they are abnormal, you have an abnormal gut microbiome. If you have a normal gut microbiome and abnormal clock genes, because you've taken good care of your gut, you can get good sleep. But if you have both abnormal clock and abnormal gut bacteria, you're going to have bad sleep. If you have normal clock genes but bad gut bacteria, you can have bad sleep. There's that much of a cross-talk interaction. And what we know is that DNA is not static. And it's in a read-write situation, essentially. Inside the nucleus, signals go back and forth to continually adjust what's going on in the genome. And we actually have to repair the genome. So we have to rewrite parts of the genome using specific enzymes in the nucleus. And sometimes those enzymes are ineffective. And if we get damage to our DNA and we have an ineffective transcription repair enzyme, we might not do it well. And this is where we can get mutations and deletions and changes that result in things like cancer. So again, it's so important to be able to take care of that genome from all kinds of different lifestyle and dietary nutritional pathways. We're going to see this as a much bigger tool than what we had ever expected it to be. And it's not really going to require us using these novel new technologies like the CRISPR-Cas9 that helps us to gene edit. That's going to be a possibility too. I'm talking about doing your own rewriting, because we know that we can think our genes into a different place. Consciousness affects the expression of our genes. If we are sad, we express sad genes. If we are happy, we express happy genes. We can force the situation. If we are sad and we force ourselves to wear a smile all the time, we trigger a set of genes that is the happy set of genes. It works both ways. So we need to really work on policing up our thoughts. We need to clean up the way we think about ourselves. We need to be aware when we think poorly about ourselves and criticize ourselves, because when we're doing that, we're denigrating us, and it puts on a different set of genes, and it can be detrimental. We need to stroke our genome with goodness. So if we spend time every day in quiet, personal quiet, 5 to 10 minutes, where we just live in gratitude, giving thanks for everything that we've got right now, and being very, very authentic about the gratitude, because sometimes it's really hard when we're in a lot of stress and everything seems to be falling apart. We don't often have the chance to actually feel that. But spend 5 minutes and get to a point where you can at least be thankful for one small thing. Maybe the fact that you took a breath today, that you were able to actually get out of bed. But gratitude changes our entire genome. We can live with that and compassion and create a whole new world.
And that's some good advice for people to improve their health. And you're listening to Dr. Fred Harvey. We have about a little less than a minute left or so. And I want to remind people that you can call in 813-238-8001 if you would like to support Dr. Fred Harvey's show and have it continue on the airwaves. We certainly want it to continue, so we would like to see that support for the show. It has come up short so far. You can also donate at wmnf.org. Dr. Fred, if there's any one last appeal you'd like to make to people to donate to your show, we have about 30 seconds left.
Well, folks, anybody who's out there listening, if you really like what we're doing here, please contact the station. Sean's giving you the number and you know the web address, so please donate. Next week, we're going to talk about pharmacogenomics and how we can look at drugs and their interaction with our genome.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Fred Harvey, for Health and Nutrition Show today. And you still have time to make a donation, but if you call now, 813-238-8001. You can also make a donation on our secure website at WMNF.org. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Bradenton, Newport Richey. And this has been the Fred Harvey's Health and Nutrition Show. Thanks so much for your donations. Call now.